Oh man, you guys gotta see this thing that my buddy did. I really can't stop laughing at it. And I hope you guys find it half as funny as I find it.
Nice.
All right, so my friend Shane, whatever, and check out his pronunciation on Facebook. Pronounce his name.
All right, you one more time?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that picked up in the mic.
That's not actually his name, but it was good.
Oh, it's not his name. His name is not Dildo McButtplug.
Dildo McButtplug. Alright, everybody, welcome to Inside the Locker. My name is Ramon Ramirez. Before we move forward, we just very briefly wanted to just offer our prayers and condolences to Lamar Odom and his family, a longtime NBA player. A lot of us remember him from the late 90s when he was at, I think he was at Rhode Island, and just dropping a series of really impressive buzzer beaters. So hoping that he recovers, and just shows how liked that he is, that everyone in the league is basically tweeting out condolences. So hopefully this time next week it's not a story, and I guess we'll just jump right into it. All right, folks, Inside the Locker, Thursday night edition. It's a Thursday in October. There's so much going on that we're all a little bit overwhelmed. With me, as always, Adam Charles, the Beef Nuggets, are here.
As always, minus the flu.
Minus the flu. Flu is not here.
Yeah.
JC De Leon.
What's up?
The big ticket in the house. And Logan Urie, producer. What's going on, man?
I'll bring the food poisoning next week.
With me, as always, Penny the dog, hanging out here in the background.
She's passed out right now.
Oh, she's sleeping.
Okay,
so
cool.
She's sleeping. So, which means that, you know, about halfway through the podcast, she'll wake up and start barking. And I guess we should just get this podcast started. All right, so
you played that three times, and I've not failed to laugh.
It's so funny. It's so funny for those wondering what that was. My friend Shane, shout out to my friend Shane, for no reason on his Facebook profile. You can specify how your name is pronounced, which is a really cool, you know, forward thinking thing that Facebook does for people with names that are unrecognizable to Western English. And his, of course, is the following.
Dildo McButtplug.
Which would be Dildo McButtplug, anyway.
It's weird that she says dildo so clearly.
I know.
Dildo McButtplug. Anyway, all right, so we should probably lead off with the Chicago Cubs. I don't know if, JC, have you been following this thing? I haven't.
Oh, yeah, hopefully I've taken over the Twitter account. Hopefully everybody isn't sick of it.
I'll have you know that I've had "Go Cubs, go, go Cubs, go" stuck in my head for the past like 3 days.
Yeah, it's a good year. We're at that dangerous point now where it's like I don't think we can. I mean, you know, if it doesn't happen, I guess at this point you could say, well, it was still a good year, and they're really young. This is probably a little bit earlier than people expected.
No, that's complete bullshit. Yeah. If they will not be back next year, I guarantee it. Yeah. The year after that is such a. This team is built for this year thing. That doesn't ever happen. Every time there's a preseason, this is the team, this is the year, this is the moment.
Yeah.
They always crumble. And so this is the moment. This is the one moment that you guys are going to have, and it's time to season. The good news is, as of Thursday afternoon, Chicago Cubs are now your odds-on favorite.
They knocked out the Pirates, who were the Cubs basically were the third-best win-loss team in all of Major League, and then to get into the playoffs, they knocked out the second-best team, which was the Pirates, and then at 98 wins, and then, they just knocked off the Cardinals, who had 100 wins. So that leaves the team left with the most wins in Major League Baseball was the Chicago Cubs. And so, you know.
Yeah, but right now you have to look at the Cubs as the favorite.
Yeah, they are the odds-on favorite in Vegas, and it scares the shit out of me. But
it shouldn't, because they have the best team. Jake Arrieta is a win every time you trot him out, so he's going to win two games in every series no matter what. So you just got to enjoy the ride and feel good about it.
Yeah, I was comforted by the fact that Arrieta's last outing, you figured he was going to get pelted at some point, and he got pelted the last game, and the Cubs overcame it with 6 home runs.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that was going to be his one game where he probably wasn't pitching the way he had been the last second half of the season. So, I'm definitely optimistic. I'm going to be ecstatic if they win.
I want to talk about this a little bit, you know, because this is something that I actually haven't really paid attention to, but I know it's on the mind of Cubs fans a lot, and that's the Back to the Future connection. So Back to the Future 2, and again, I haven't seen this movie in maybe 15 years, but basically, Back to the Future 2, he goes to the year 2015, picks up a newspaper, right? It's like a USA Today, and yeah. It says, like, Cubs win the World Series. And now, we're in that window, right?
Yeah, it's
you're exactly in that window.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those things where the Cubs can pull it off. Like, you can't convince me that there aren't baseball gods and that they don't have a sense of humor. Because yeah, it's going to be hilarious if they win. And yeah, I think a lot of movie fans, like, the whole genesis of this podcast was to bring movie fans and you know, sports fans together. And those are the, you know, I have a lot of both in my Twitter feed, and so. Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of movie fans who aren't sports fans, like, rooting for the Back to the Future ending, and that's really cool.
And honestly, the geek in me is just rooting for the Cubs to win exclusively for that.
Yeah, I'm more of a Rookie of the Year guy, but still, I'm rooting for the Cubs. And, you know, I was lucky enough to see the Cubs this summer.
Also, you're a little bit younger than I am, so
maybe by a pinch. Yeah. All right, so. I don't know what else there's really left to discuss about the Chicago Cubs. I mean, and that's kind of the scary thing, right? It's like they are the best team standing, knocked out the Pittsburgh Pirates, knocked out the St. Louis Cardinals. They're going to be favored in every series going forward. You think, boy, you know, maybe the Toronto Blue Jays can kind of, you know, swing them out of the building. But I mean, that's I like everything that I'm seeing from Chicago.
Yeah.
Give me your three things that have to happen if you're the Cubs. To win the World Series?
Well, so Arrieta's got to keep pitching the way he has been. The bats have to be a little consistent. Like, so this first series, 85% of the runs they scored came from home run. That's probably not going to happen again.
Yeah.
So they've got to come up with more hits that aren't home runs. They've got to be better at situational batting. They've got an injury. Addison Russell, who's one of their promising young guys, is going to be out for at least the NLCS with a hamstring. But you know, I tend to look for all different things for comfort. The first couple games the Cubs won, they did it without Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo hitting very well, and then all of a sudden Rizzo and Bryant came alive. So yeah, so Arrieta's got to pitch the way he has been. Lester's got to pitch better. As much money as the Cubs spent on him. And, they've got to get better situational hitting.
And let me ask you this. So right now as we're recording this, the Mets and the Dodgers are in a dogfight. Who would you rather play if you're the Chicago Cubs?
So the Cubs went 7-0 against the Mets this season. They went 3-4 against the Dodgers.
That's an over, so you'd rather play the Mets.
Yeah, I'd rather play the Mets, but also because I think Matt Harvey's shoulder is either almost done or just mentally I think he's about to quit. Like, he had a bad second half of the season. A lot of Mets fans are turning on him because he came out and said that he was about to reach his pitched inning limit for the year, meaning he might not pitch in the playoffs, and people were like, well, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Arrieta's been killing himself the second half of the year, going way over his pitch limit. Like, yeah, and so I think Matt Harvey is he's about to deteriorate, and that's kind of, yeah, I'd rather see him play the Mets.
That's interesting, and I think that's it. I think the Cubs are going to win the World Series. I think that. I mean,
I hope so. I mean, I really hope so.
Yeah,
no, I think
Texas teams are out. Yeah. Who else am I going to vote for?
I think most of us at this table are definitely.
Everyone's rooting for the Cubs. Absolutely.
Yeah. They're fun.
You want to see the moment happen, and especially. I can't see it not happening at this point. I mean, they're there. It's going to happen. Like, I get that there's history and I get that people are nervous, but you have the best team.
They're certainly way better than the last year they came this close was the year of the Bartman catch. And
yeah.
Nobody really expected them to get that far that year. And even when they were in it, people were like, well, they're not. This is as far as they'll go, obviously.
Yeah.
And
yeah, 03 was tough because 03 was the Bartman catch, but before that it was you have Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood they're going to win one of these games. And yeah, you had a Mariners team that, while, you know, history has seen them as a very, like, young, talented team at the time, you're just like, yeah, the Fish are kind of, you know, they've overachieved a little bit. I'm not that worried about the Mariners, but this is different. I mean, this is just, the challenge was, you think about like the 92 Cowboys, a team that really had to slay the demons and go into San Francisco, go into Candlestick Park, and win the NFC Championship. Once you beat the 49ers, the rest is just a culmination. You know, the Buffalo Bills weren't, you know, it was like a 52-17 kind of a game. You guys already took out the Pirates and the Cardinals. I mean, that's, to me, that's where the baseball playoff, in this postseason in particular, is won. So I'm going to be the first to, this is not a jinx. Congratulate you, Chicago Cubs. Oh, God. Congratulations. 2015 World Series champions. It is happening. You can go ahead and book it. So, congratulations. It's going to be
I can just hear it in JC's head right now.
All right, moving on a little bit. You know, last week we totally maybe overdid it a little bit with, you know, bagging on the University of Texas Longhorns football program. We spent a solid maybe 10 to 15 minutes complaining about Texas football, being down about Texas football.
And I'm sorry that I missed that, too.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Yeah, wait, hold on. So how did that even happen? Logan wasn't even here.
Yeah, I know. To be honest, I'm probably going to be the last people to actually rag on the Longhorns. I respect the Longhorns. Even though I'm an Aggie, I don't. I still respect them.
Yeah, I respect the Aggies as well. I mean, you know, we don't play each other right now, so it's not as like seething. You know, there isn't like this game in November where you're like, man, you know, let's hope we're in shape for the Aggies. All right.
Yeah.
So Texas A&M plays. The Longhorns beat Oklahoma in what was the most watched college football game of the week, 24-17, a comprehensive beatdown. Take advantage of Oklahoma's suspect offensive line. Put them on their back. Don't let them get going. I guess I want to ask you guys, as kind of, you know, UT fans live in Austin, kind of pay attention. Is this the new normal for Charlie Strong's Texas? Was this the watershed game, or was it just kind of a flash in the pan and taking advantage of some bad matchups?
I don't think it's a flash in the pan, but I do think it is one of those games that's going to give them the spark that I think that they're looking for in terms of excitement. But I wouldn't look to this to be telling for the rest of the season either.
Yeah, I don't think that this is the turnaround game per se. This is a game that gives them inspiration for the future, but this is not a game that will, like, suddenly they're not going to win out.
Yeah, I think the hard, it's rivalry games are always the hardest ones to gauge in terms of expectations for the rest of the year. Like, it really doesn't matter what the records are going into the game. You always just want to show up your opponent.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? Yeah, because I think it's easy to say, like, playing the result, but kind of going into it, I had a weird feeling, sort of like Mac Brown's last year when he beat Oklahoma. I had a weird feeling that Charlie Strong was going to get it done. And it's good that they have a bye week after that, because they can build on it, and they could build on it with a solid week of practice and take that momentum into whoever they play next. So, yeah. I think it's a good place to start.
It's a team that's going to, you know, like we said last week, you know, I think the biggest problem that Charlie Strong, the biggest mistake they made as a coach was continuing the Sean Watson offensive coordinator and Tyrone Swoops quarterback relationship from January through the offseason and up to South Bend. That was 8+ months that he lost. And if you'd gotten Gerard Hurd and Jay Norvell ready to get that offense going in January, I think you'd be a lot farther along. You'd be in a position where you would have been maybe a little more competitive against Notre Dame. You probably could have beaten Oklahoma State. But that doesn't matter. I think at this point, look at these next couple of games. They're off this particular weekend. Starting October 24th, Kansas State, Iowa State, Kansas. Excuse me. Kansas State, Iowa State, Kansas at West Virginia. Those are four completely winnable games before another bye. You're looking at a 2-4 team that could very well be 6-4 going into those final two showdowns, one on Thanksgiving, one on that first weekend in December at Baylor. So all of a sudden, you know, what is Texas playing for? What's on the line? Well, a bowl. And if, you know, if you get to 6 wins, you're Texas, you're obviously going to a bowl. To think that this team could be bowl eligible after the way that they started and the losses they took, especially after they bottomed out against TCU, losing 50-7, with all of these freshmen starting, is pretty unbelievable. And I think if they get that, if they're able to win down the stretch, if they have four more wins in these next six games, I'll be thoroughly impressed. And I think Charlie Strong at this point is no longer coaching for his job, but I think he has a lot that he can show and prove. And Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Well, I think he's definitely kind of silenced all criticism about coaching for his job. That was the one definitive thing that happened this past weekend. I think at this point he is now coaching for the future. He's coaching for the team, and I've always been an advocate of Charlie Strong. I like, even as an Aggie, I think that he is a good coach. I think he's on the right track. My concern was always more about, does he have the support? Does he have the timeline to be able to do what he needs to do to ride the ship?
Yeah. I think the one thing that he does have going for him is the fact that he has chosen to start as many freshmen as he has. So I think not only is that smart for getting the players in there that you brought in early game time, like way earlier than you probably would have ever expected or would have preferred. But the fact that you do have such a young team, I think it does buy you a little bit of, not excuse, but reason for maybe having the kind of record that maybe you do have. Like, if you come out with a losing record, you can at least rely on the fact of, like, look, guys, they were young. They're going to be better next year. Like, these are guys coming directly out of high school. Yeah. Like, what do you expect? So give me one more year. They have a year of experience under their belt. They've gone in, you know, they've gone to the Cotton Bowl and they took out Oklahoma. You know, it's a team that they have something that they can build on now, but I really don't think, I wouldn't expect that for the rest of the year. Like, I don't expect them to go in against Baylor and, you know, make much of a game of it.
And he's even still, like, that Oklahoma game has, you know, positive ramifications in that they've gotten some verbal commitments from four-star recruits and things like that. And I think people could see that, you know, there's definitely a bright future on the horizon.
If anything, I think this is like, you know, this was Crash beating Brokeback Mountain. And I only say that because I really wanted to call Oklahoma Brokeback Mountain.
I love it. That's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, look, there are very tangible winds at play. This is a Twitter from our friend Will Wilkerson. A tweet from our friend Will Wilkerson, who works at Horns Digest. After that win, Texas now has the number 70, 98, 237 overall players ranked in the country, as well as a 6'6 pass catching tight end. So four huge verbals that they picked up after that Oklahoma game. And, you know, we're talking about building the talent, building the spine. All right. Obviously, we're in Austin, but there's more to college football than the Austin city limits. So what we're going to do now is we're going to talk sort of like the five big trends. We're kind of approaching the midway point of the season. We're going to talk five big storylines, trends, things that are happening. I want to start, though, with Texas A&M and Alabama, because we have an expert in our ranks here, Logan Yeary. All of a sudden, the Aggies are 5-0. playing in the biggest home crowd in the SEC. And wouldn't you know it, Nick Saban's boys coming into town. Logan, again, I asked for three keys to victory for the Cubs. I'm going to ask you the same thing. Three key things that need to happen for Texas A&M to beat Alabama. What are we watching for when we tune into this game Saturday at like 2:30?
I think number off of my time spent watching ESPN and sites. Hi, Penny. I think the number one key is going to be the A&M defensive line versus the Alabama O line and Nick Coker, the Alabama quarterback. A&M has two of the best defensive ends, pass rushers in the country right now, in Myles Garrett and Deshaun Hall. And if they can get some pressure on Coker and get him to make some mistakes, throw maybe a couple of picks or a fumble or something like that, that is going to make all the difference in the world in this game. If the Alabama line can shut them down, if Alabama can get the run game going and just kind of eliminate those guys from doing what they do best, and really beat up on the A&M linebackers who are young and depleted and you know are nursing a bunch of injuries, then it's going to be a long day for A&M fans. I think that's number one. Number two is going to be the speed of the game. A&M, while it's slowed down this year,
is typically a pretty fast offense, which tends to be Nick Saban's weakness in games. So hopefully that could be in the benefit of A&M. And number two is that, like, Alabama just has an amazing defense. Their defensive line is incredible. They're going to most likely stop the run. If they can make A&M one-dimensional, if they can stop the run, then they're going to give the A&M offense fits, which is definitely our strong point. So,
all right, at this point, how are you feeling? Who you got?
At the risk of jinxing myself, I feel like I feel pretty confident.
I think you should.
I feel confident in the realm of, like, 55% chance that we win, and most of that is because the game is in College Station. It's a really hyped up game. A&M is just coming off of a bye week. Alabama just played against a very tough, very physical Arkansas team. They're probably going to be pretty sore, pretty tired after that, and they have to travel to College Station in front of 104,000 plus raging maniac students. The cards are stacked in our favor. At the same time, you can never count out a Nick Saban team. That man is going to go down as the greatest coach of this generation.
More than Urban Meyer, you think?
Oh, yeah. Urban Meyer is not too far off, but Nick Saban is absolutely there.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you talk about actually coaching, you know, preparation, breaking every game down to its kind of granular subset, nobody's better than Saban. Urban Meyer is just a guy that knows how to win and knows how to stockpile talent. Absolutely. All right. What else is happening in college football? So we got Texas. We got Texas A&M. What else?
USC not having a good week.
Yeah, we should probably talk about that. Steve Sarkisian, he goes from leave of absence to getting fired because he violated the zero tolerance policy and showed up drunk to, was it like a practice?
Well, yeah, I think like a Sunday practice.
Yeah, it was supposedly that, like, or like a team meeting or something along those lines. The reports are still rumors to this moment, but he there were players like tweeting that or like texting other people that Sark is lit again, and and not lit as in the lit Pope kind of way.
It's one of those unfortunate things. Like, anytime anybody clearly has a problem like that, like, you want them to get help. I think it's unfortunate that he had to be fired. I don't know, it's hard to look at it as, I mean, it's easy to look at it from both sides and that you shouldn't show up to work drunk.
It's kind of a given.
Yeah. There were people questioning whether or not he should have even been hired to begin with. Like, I actually liked the story of Ed Orgeron, and you know, he was somebody from Louisiana, grew up watching USC, and he really loved USC, and when he was given the chance to be the interim coach, like, he absolutely loved it. Yeah. And the team responded.
Team rallied around.
Yeah, I felt like they should have kept him around. And
you know, it's sometimes you try to keep the good times rolling a little bit too long. And in this case, it was the Pete Carroll tree. We got to get another one of those guys. We got to keep it rolling. And they poached him from University of Washington. You know, and he hadn't really done anything at the University of Washington. I think, was he fit for the USC job? I really don't know, but he wasn't fit to, you know, he was in a shitty, messed up place internally, and obviously you can't keep him at school anymore. So we'll see what happens. Could be maybe a little Chip Kelly going to USC going forward. I'm completely blowing that out of my, I'm pulling that out of nowhere. But,
one name I heard possibly mentioned. What about Kevin Sumlin?
Ooh,
burning, burning
Kevin Sumlin going to USC.
Don't touch Summy. No, the rumor is yes, that's been going around. But at the same time, I'm biased, but Kevin Sumlin has been on record saying that Texas A&M is his dream job. He did bring up whenever Sark was hired. Kevin Sumlin was kind of like being flirted with, but it's pretty much a known factor that he used that mostly as a way to get a raise.
Yeah, at the end of the season, cue the press conference where A&M's like, "Hey, we just decided to all of a sudden give Kevin Sumlin $5 million more per year."
Yeah, yeah. Which, hey, good for him,
because, you know, like, we're nice.
Yeah.
Well, All right, so USC in shambles, and again, this is a team. I'm embarrassed. I picked USC to go to the Final Four and win the Pac-12, and now it's looking like all of a sudden UCLA is good, Stanford's good. I did not see that coming. Oregon's down. All right, what else is happening in college football?
Steve Spurrier.
Steve Spurrier. And this visor.
This is an interesting one because it actually did spark a lot more debate than I thought it would. So basically, South Carolina not having a very good season. A couple days after the Sarkisian thing, just kind of out of the blue, Steve Spurrier announces that first it came out that he was retiring. The words from his actual mouth saying he's like, "Nope, I'm just resigning." And yeah, it sparked a debate of people like, "Well, you're a great coach and you're an all-time legend, but you're quitting. Like, you're quitting on your team in the middle of the season just when things are getting tough." And it's like, I don't know, players can't do that.
But at the same time, I do have a tremendous amount of respect for him because I think that I don't think he quit as much as he realized that he was kind of the weak link in that. Like, the game has kind of moved beyond him. Like, Steve Spurrier is going to go down in history as one of the all-time greats.
Mm-hmm.
How many people can you say have won a Heisman Trophy, coached a Heisman Trophy, and won a national championship?
Yeah. And then failed as the Washington Redskins coach.
Yeah, and that's it.
But you did come back and you revived, revived yourself. You came into an SEC program that was in shambles and
made it a thing.
Like they had back-to-back 11-win seasons. Like, when would you ever have expected to hear that from South Carolina?
Yeah. I love Steve Spurrier and his Florida Gators in the 90s were by far the most fun team. You know, it's controversial. Some people like those Nebraska teams. Some people like the Florida State teams.
Yeah.
I think, you know, everyone had their team, and then it had, like, the team that was a national power that you kind of liked. Mm. You know, some people like Miami. Some people like, I mean, who's good in the 90s? Miami, Notre Dame, Florida State, Florida.
I remember the first time realizing how much of a difference between NFL football and college football there was when Danny Werfel failed in the NFL. And I was like, how could this guy fail?
Yeah, this guy's going to be the greatest. Danny Werfel, those 96 Gators, when they lost to Florida State, and they destroyed Florida State in the Sugar Bowl. A lot of fun. It's a bummer. You know, no more Steve Spurrier.
That's the thing is like apparently like he's not he didn't say he retired, he said he resigned. So
yeah, he did bring up in his press conference, he said, you know, who knows, maybe I'll coach like a high school team or maybe I'll like consult some other team or something like that. I you know, like a lot of people have been throwing around the idea of like him replacing Lee Corso on College Game Day. I think that that's a fascinating idea, you know. Like, he is an amazing character, and I think I do not want to see Steve Spurrier leave college football. I want him to still be involved, even if, like, I don't care if he's a coach necessarily. I just want him to be involved in the whole thing.
Man, Lee Corso is 80 years old.
He's had at least one stroke.
He's been there so long. Yeah, we can't. Yeah, Lee Corso has to be there until he dies. Because it's one of those situations where if, you know, those old coaches, if he steps down, he's going to die like 2 months later.
The bad part is like, yeah, I guess you want him to be there until he dies. You just don't want to see him die, though, like right there on the air.
Probably not. But he is the. Oh.
He's going to put on the elephant helmet from Alabama and then just never be able to take it off again.
The king of all kings. Seriously, the great Lee Corso. Oh my God, what a national treasure. My goodness. I love Lee Corso so much.
And a lot of people don't know, but like one of my favorite pieces of trivia about him was that he was Burt Reynolds' college roommate. They shared a dorm room together.
Wow.
At Florida State.
That's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I love Lee Corso so much. I don't know why we can't replace Lee Corso. I need 5 more years of Lee Corso before I can let him go.
Five years is stretching.
He'll be 85.
Yeah, because you don't want him to be I can't think of his name. The old
Lou Holtz.
Yeah,
but Lou Holtz is delightful as well. But the thing about Lee Corso, when you got a Corso, he gets more unintentionally hilarious every year that he's there, and it's great. And he says, he'll put on like the racist Florida State gear. He'll joke around. He'll put on the duck. He'll get on a motorcycle. He'll like cuss on the air.
He got body slammed one year by a wrestler. Who was it? I forget who it was.
Basically, I would like him to last 5 years if for no other reason than because I'd like to have a kid within, like, the next, you know, two or so, maybe.
Yeah.
And I'd like my child to experience Lee Corso.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That's what YouTube is for.
All right, what else is happening in college football, guys?
Michigan on the rise.
Michigan on the rise, 4-1. Your Michigan Wolverines have not lost since opening night at Utah.
Hashtag khaki.
And, the big khaki. Jim Harbaugh's got those boys playing some elite football, playing Michigan State this weekend at home, having just demolished Northwestern.
Speaking of Corso, College Game Day is going to be there.
College Game Day will absolutely be there. Yeah, Michigan State, it's going to be a I can't remember the last time.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. So Michigan is ranked 12th, Michigan State ranked 8th. Michigan is actually favored by a touchdown. Michigan State hasn't covered a spread all season.
Michigan State 6-0, and they have they have a quarterback that's going to be a first round draft pick. I think you have to. I mean, you're right. Michigan is playing big money ball, but with that Michigan State defense, Michigan State is still undefeated. They housed Oregon. You have to. I think that's a hype train. Did you really say Michigan is favored by a touchdown?
Yeah,
that's unbelievable. That's ridiculous.
It could be one of those things like Vegas is trying to swing the line purposely one way or the other.
That's irresponsible. You have an undefeated top 7 team heading into the Big House, a team that is sort of rebuilding and regenerating and overachieving. And you, with all this NFL talent, having gone through a series of big games, beaten teams like Baylor, beaten teams like Oregon, I don't see it. I don't see it at all. Give me Michigan State all day by a touchdown.
That was going to be my,
touchdown, but okay, so what, 10-3?
No, 27-20 is kind of where
really?
I think it'll be nice, tight, pack game.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I feel good about it. I think you have to feel good about Michigan State in this game. All right. I think we just talked about college football. I mean, I think we just did our rounds.
Hooray!
Is there anything, any big thing that we're not really missing?
I mean, actually going back to Michigan, I will, tip my hat to them. It takes a lot to pitch 3 straight shutouts. I believe the last time they did it was sometime back in the 80s, but I don't remember. I don't know how frequently it actually happens in Division I football, but pitching 3 straight shutouts and one of those teams being a ranked team and just actually beating the shit out of them, no matter how it goes this coming up weekend, that's something to compliment.
It's damn impressive, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that might have only been 4 things, so if we want to do a 5th, we can just say so long and happy recovery to Nick Chubb.
The Georgia running back, Heisman Trophy contender, and boom goes the knee. Your next Marcus Lattimore, ladies and gentlemen.
But I heard luckily, and I haven't heard many updates on this except for this past Saturday. Apparently, he did not actually tear his ACL; he just tore most of his other ligaments.
Is that good or bad?
It's kind of good. So, from my understanding, and I'm no medical doctor or athletic just or anything like that, apparently, repairing the ligaments is a much easier process than repairing the ACL or all the other parts of your knee. I don't know.
I guess good.
I guess I don't. Honestly, it's still a tragedy. It's still really sad because he's an extremely talented player, and from my understanding, he's supposed to be an amazing guy, just like a good-hearted person.
Yeah.
But
now
it's the last name Chubb.
Yeah.
you can't not love somebody whose last name is Chubb.
His career is completely over. And that sucks.
Good news is you didn't tear your ACL. That's the good news. Bad news is you tore everything thing possible. You tore it.
And also, you are not going to make any money now. You will not be drafted as a top tier caliber talent.
I think that there's still the potential there because he didn't tear his ACL, from my understanding, and I could be totally wrong about this. And please tweet at us if I am wrong, because I appreciate that.
And speaking of Twitter, we
need
have
every single other ligament too.
Yes, exactly.
We have some fan questions this evening.
Yeah, and I think it can get us right into.
I did want to bring up one other thing. Like the Florida quarterback, a freshman quarterback named Will Greer, actually got suspended by the NCAA for taking PEDs. He was one of the reasons why Florida is ranked number 8 right now in the AP. And he was apparently so there was something where, like, so last week the entire Florida team had the flu, and Will Greer took a a couple of, like, over-the-counter medications, which apparently counted as PEDs by the NCAA, and now is suspended for a full calendar year, so he won't be able to play until October of next year.
By the way, guys, what the fuck are we doing here? Game of the week, with all due respect, Florida at LSU, two undefeated teams, top 10 matchup. Holy fuck, my dick is hard. I can't wait to watch this game. This is amazing.
Leonard Fournette, man.
But I want to ask you then, the Will Greer situation, is this a honest mistake, or is this a, come on, he was juicing?
No, I get the impression from looking at the reports and looking, he gave a press conference. It seems like he was just a dumb 18-year-old kid who didn't realize that this was a banned substance in this medication that he took. He gave a press conference and he was like tearing up and like almost crying like on the podium, saying like, "I'm really sorry." And
so it sounds like a bullshit technicality.
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean,
now here's what is not a bullshit technicality. How about DeAndre Porter, a freshman defensive back for the Gators, who was arrested for firing a gun at his pregnant girlfriend?
Well, things happen.
Yeah, we've all been there. We've all done it. We all do it.
Yeah, I feel you, man.
Tough week for the University of Florida. And, the funny thing is that, like...
It's not funny at all.
That's really terrible.
Like, those are, like, on the opposite ends of, like, penalty spectrum. Like, I'm sorry. I mistakenly took something over the counter. I didn't know it was illegal. I really apologize.
Yeah.
Oh, I shot my girlfriend.
It probably is one of those weird things. Like, the reason why Will Greer was suspended for years is because the bylaws are written that way. There's no... This probably is one of those things where it's like, well, there's no rule that says I can't... There's no rule that says how long I'm supposed to suspend you for for firing a gun at your pregnant girlfriend. So, four games.
Four games. It is a tough situation. And how about Jim McElwain, the coach of the Gators, has them undefeated. This is a guy that, if anybody like listens to The Herd, Colin Cowherd, like, it was buddies with him in college, and
basically... Roommates.
Talks about him at every turn.
What's all his college roommates and shit?
Yeah, I don't know. My college roommate was Evan Sutton. Do you guys know who he is? No, he's just some dude. He's like my buddy. Let me tell you about my roommate, John.
Is it Tommy Lee Jones or Al Gore?
Al Gore. My college roommate was Jonathan Huerta. He lives in Allentown, Pennsylvania. So little name drop in there. Pretty star-studded situation.
I like how you just doxed your college roommate on.
I too. All right. Before we move on, I just wanted to shout out the Mexican national team, and I wanted to talk very briefly about something that happened. Bill Simmons was saying that he skipped the Mets and the Dodgers game.
He missed the whole Chase Utley thing.
So that he could watch USA play Mexico in what was a gigantic game, 93,000 people strong, packing in the Rose Bowl. And I just wanted to say just a couple of takeaways, because we had Stephen Whiting on to dissect the game and to pick the game. And after that, right now, everybody's calling for the firing of the USA coach, Jurgen Klinsmann. It's a tough situation. Klinsmann has come into this program sort of promising the moon. I'll tell you what it is. You hire an offensive coordinator that has a lights-out offense, and he comes in and goes, "Hey, we're gonna do a crazy spread offense, and we're gonna score 50 points a game." You hire like a Dana Holgorsen type from West Virginia, and then he comes in there and he's playing two tight end formations for 4 years and trying not to get killed and bunching up. And so at this point, everyone's kind of over it, and everyone's really upset that they haven't seen. The results have been average, but even when you get results...
I think the results have been above average, which is great for an American team.
Slightly above average, but it's the type of soccer that he wants to play, fluid, offensive, attacking, beautiful soccer. And unfortunately, what he does is he every time he has a big game, he goes into his turtle formation, and he gets guys like Jermaine Jones on the back line, and just has everybody bunch up and sort of try to stay in the game as long as possible. And what you saw with a team like Mexico, a team that's actually been making quite a bit of progress in the last 4 years, is completely unlock the United States, dominate possession, play beautiful soccer, score within the first 10 minutes of the game. And if it wasn't for a couple of bad misses, Mexico could have been up 3-0, 4-0. You go into overtime, 2-2, but you have to give credit to the United States for staying in the game. DeAndre Yedlin to Chris Wood, two under 23 players that are, in my opinion, about all we got going forward. So basically, for everybody that wants to fire Jurgen Klinsmann, he's not going to get fired. He's being paid X amount of dollars. He's a giant international presence. He's bringing prestige. I think the United States has to feel... I don't know. I mean, you know, you...
I feel like the issue with Klinsmann is it's a culture fit. He is not your typical American coach in any sport. Yeah. He's very much a Eastern European or like European sassy to a certain degree. This is my way. I'm doing it this way. Yeah. Kind of character and
sounds like Chip Kelly.
Yeah,
it's the Chip Kelly thing, but it's also people get mad because he doesn't answer questions. You know, like he'll be like, well, this is the decision that I made, and so this is the formation that I made. But here's the problem, and here's like, oh, this was my decision. I went with this formation.
An answer, like a non-answer, is I don't know.
But he threw Fabian Johnson under the bus this week in the aftermath of the game. Just this week, he said that he sent Fabian Johnson, who is, you know, one of the two or three best players the United States men's national team has going right now, plays in Europe, plays in the Premier League. And he said, Fabian Johnson asked to come out of the game. I thought that he was, you know, complaining and basically whining. And so that's why I took Fabian Johnson out of the game. And that's why I wasn't able to bring in my, like, choice substitute, because he kept complaining about going out. And so he said, literally, so I've sent him home so he can think about his commitment to the game. Now, Fabian Johnson had been out 6 weeks going into the USA game, and then he plays 100-plus minutes on a serious injury. And so, again, a little bit of a culture shock, a little bit of, like, not handling it. Like, that's something that the press shouldn't have known about. He should have kept it in-house. And what you're seeing this week from all the USA fans, all the USA podcast blogs, is fire Klinsmann, fire Klinsmann, fire Klinsmann. You know, for what? For what? I don't know who you bring in. There's no other name. There's no other person that wants to take on this kind of a job. It's just a situation where you're stuck with him.
Pele.
Go get yourself Pele. But lost in all that is, boy, Mexico looked good. Boy, Mexico looked dominant. Oh, and look out, because now we're going to go to the Confederations Cup. And it's a tournament that the whole world literally watches, the Confederations Cup, and so it's a big deal. It was a big loss for the USA, and you know, there's a part of me that wanted to see the USA win that game, because getting to the Confederations Cup stage, even though the tournament doesn't matter that much, for those that don't know, the summer before the World Cup, so in this case in 2017, all of the continental champs play a tournament, and it's just like a rehearsal for the World Cup. It happens in the World Cup stadiums. In this case, it's going to be in Russia. And, yeah, you're going to have Mexico representing North America and not the United States. So it would have been a big stage. Jurgen wanted it. Big missed opportunity.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest problem with this whole thing is that if American soccer fans want to increase, want to grow the sport in America, then you really need them to be successful. And this is kind of a step back in that. Like, the only time that they're going to be paying attention is – going to be the next World Cup, which is going to be, yeah, you know, almost 4 years from now.
Yeah, 2-3 years from now. And then last note on this, not only does the United States lose to Mexico for the Confederations Cup, they lose to Honduras for the Olympic qualifying. So right now, the United States may not even qualify for the Olympics next summer in Rio in soccer. They have to go to Rio later this month and play Colombia for one final Olympic bid, and they'll be an underdog there. You top that off, and then on Wednesday night, the United States plays Costa Rica and loses to Costa Rica. This is an island of 5 million people, a country of 300 million people. How does an island of 5 million people find its 11? We still don't have an 11. And we haven't been able to produce any type of world-class player. We've been getting it done, and we've been overachieving this century with B and B-plus players that are very much invested. And when you have a coach that doesn't necessarily connect with players and that has all this European prestige, his ragtag scrap of players are not as invested as they need to be, and you're just seeing the results on the field. So there you go.
Well, it's kind of like trying to field a hockey team in a country full of football players. You know, like they're different focuses, they're different sports. Yeah, so,
different focuses, absolutely.
You know, like if you grew up your whole life focused on this, like one being passionate about this one sport, then I'm sure that the United States could field an amazing team. But the problem is we have so many other sports that really kind of spread our attention.
Well, you know, I'm wondering whether or not truthfully, I don't see this happening in the foreseeable future, but with the, as I think, with football being the most popular sport here in the United States, I think without question, football, probably.
Far and away. I mean, I think the number one sport in the United States is football. The number two is college football.
I'm with you there. But with the, I think with the continuing exposure of CTE and concussions and things like that happening, and that's an unfortunate inherent part of the game as it is now. Like, I can't see that actually going away in any, unless there is some kind of medical strides to actually counteract brain damage. But if that doesn't, the thing that I think soccer may have going forward is a potential that there's going to be a lot of scared parents eventually that are going to not want to have their child play football.
Yeah,
and then one of the least contact sports, I guess, that you for some reason think of, I don't know, for me anyway, is soccer.
Like,
it's something you start of as a kid, you know, soccer moms, something you play in the neighborhood and all that stuff. I could see that potentially maybe happening.
Yeah, I mean, soccer relative to 10 years ago and to 20 years ago is so much bigger. The other thing that really pushes soccer forward is the idea, there's the NFL stuff, there's people afraid of having to put their kids in contact NFL or contact football, but it's just think about one of the most iconic international American things that happened this year, and that was the three young men, two servicemen, who stopped a gunman in France. And, I mean, really did an incredibly heroic thing by putting their lives on the line and bringing this guy down. So they're wearing Barcelona and Bayern Munich jerseys in the pictures. Like, the world of FIFA, the world of video games, the way that they sell the World Cup. My 17-year-old brother-in-law, who played high school football and just recently quit, texted me, no joke, on Sunday morning, Euro 26 qualifiers, greater than NFL football.
Well, and I even talked about when we were one of the first times it wasn't the first time I met you, but it was the first time I met your podcasting partner on the soccer show. The first time I'd really paid attention to soccer was when we were watching the World Cup last year, and immediately I was kind of like, I could see the parallels between football and like time of possession and like field positioning and all that, and it's like there are definite parallels to American football, and I could see why this is really popular.
Yeah, it's not a hard sport to understand. That's what I like about it, is that it's just such an easy sport. Just you got your 11, and then you try to kick the ball in the hole. It's so easy. It's such an easy sport to pay attention to, and it's really great. It's a whole other wormhole. But anyway, big week for the United States. Really frustrating week because, again, you're right. Totally, it's the best athletes, right? You know, LeBron James. If he grew up playing soccer, it'd be a whole different situation, right? But there's enough. There's 300 million people in this country. Soccer is big enough that we should have developed four or five world-class players yet, and we really, truly have not. We've also had our best guys, Clint Dempsey, Jozy Altidore, Michael Bradley, all of them have come back from Europe this year and have been playing in MLS, which is a double-edged sword, but you're not playing in as bigger games. The Mexican team had 11 players that were playing in Europe and playing Champions League games and playing big club stuff, and we had a team full of MLS players. It was a mismatch. It's hard to say, and it probably shouldn't be. All right,
but at the same time, it still came down to a kickoff.
It totally came down. It totally came down to the wire. I mean, you're right. I mean, when you have a rivalry game and you can kind of respond. I mean, that was a time of possession issue. That was a situation where the United States played defensive. And really caught Mexico sleeping on two kind of ugly goals, and it was awesome. I mean, it was an early set piece, and it was a late strike after Mexico had kind of started the party a little bit, but it was still. I mean, that was a game that could have been 4-0, 5-0. Like that's the problem, is that the United States has not shown any kind of growth than they have in the last 5-6 years. And I hate to be a parrot, but I think when you talk to Grant Wall or you talk to the guy that does the Soccer Morning podcast, like all of the soccer writers that are American, that cover the American sport, you talk to Kevin Morris here at the Dot, Connor, my friend who's a soccer coach, everybody says Klinsmann's got to go because the results are perpetually subpar. And I say maybe, but there's no one lining up to come in and be the next great U.S. soccer coach.
Yeah, so I don't know who's next.
Who do you bring in? Who do you bring in? Exactly. You might as well stick with a guy that the whole world recognizes as this World Cup winning, you know, champion coach. All right, on to the football that we all prefer. and I mean myself included, because as much as I love soccer, you know, I grew up in Texas. I'm obsessed with this game. The Week 6 NFL picks.
Did we want to lead off with just the questions that we're
going to... Oh, we got some questions. We got some fan questions.
Yeah. And sorry for interrupting before with the other stuff. But yes.
That's right. And he was actually... He just tweeted us. He was actually watching the live cast, but he went to bed. So I tweeted at him right now that we're answering his questions.
Let's answer your questions. Yeah, absolutely.
So David Perez... what's his Twitter name? At dpetas3573.
Shout out.
And also, you can tweet at us at ITLcast for any of your other questions from week to week. We record every night at Thursday night.
Yeah. So he basically has three undefeated questions for us. Who is the most surprising undefeated team in the NFL today?
Mm-hmm.
Who will be the next team to fall? And is it possible? Well, we know it's possible. Is it likely, I guess is what he means, for the Packers and Patriots to meet in the Super Bowl as two undefeated teams?
Right. So you have to look at the Packers as the overwhelming NFC favorite based on their record, based on their home field advantage, based on the fact that teams like the 49ers are no longer all that good.
Yeah, the Packers, kind of before the season, I was like, I think the Packers will be in the Super Bowl, and I liked Indianapolis because I'm stupid.
Oof. Well, no, it sounded good.
Yeah,
sounded good
at the time. It looked, I mean, what Indy seemed like they lacked was... good quality leadership from almost like a veteran perspective.
Yeah.
You know, and that's exactly what they went for in the offseason. Like, you hear they take Andre Johnson, they take Frank Gore, guys who have, you know, experience in the league. Frank Gore actually having experience in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, you expected those two players to come in and actually make a significant impact and get them over the hump. And not only have they not, but like, you know, Andrew Luck has seemed to regress a little bit, and that was like the given that you expected for the year, was that Andrew Luck was just going to dominate. Like, he's just continued to improve every single year, except this year. Like, he's hit that... He had his sophomore slump in his fourth year kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, so, the most surprising thing to me, you know, with... You know, the Falcons will probably go down tonight. I think they're losing to the Saints. But, you know, the Panthers are 4-0. I'm not surprised because they've been favored in every game that they've played. They just kind of started off nicely. But I am surprised to see the Denver Broncos sit at 5-0 because they've had so many problems on the offensive side of the ball. And every time you watch them play, it's a struggle. But, yeah, it's like Adam was saying, when you have veteran leaders, when you have, you know, DeMarcus Ware and Peyton Manning as these kind of symbolic leaders on each side of the ball, you have Wade Phillips running that defense, all of a sudden you have a pretty good team. And I think the question is, you know, like, is this as good as it gets for Denver? You know, is Denver going to go into a tailspin, or is Denver, specifically the offense, going to pull out of this and get the offense clicking? And that's really all on Peyton Manning. And it's a question of whether or not his arm is shot. And I think, again, when I watch him play, I think it's still fixable. I think it's solvable because, yeah, his arm is shot, but his arm has been shot since the surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not making those, like, laser seam route passes to Dallas Clark over the middle like he was for so much of his career. He's using what he has. He's using the sidelines, he's using the screens, he's using the picks, he's calling them nightly, he's literally using the referees as picks in the red zone.
Yeah.
I think he's struggled, he's come out not looking good. The running game hasn't been reliable, but I think that's going to continue to get better. And I think with Peyton Manning, you can have a 12-4 team, and you can, you know, go deep into the playoffs whether or not the arm is there.
I agree. And I would... To answer the first question, the team that's most surprising to me being 5-0 was probably Atlanta. Like, I did not expect that at all, especially with the way their schedule started. They weren't really playing, you know, cupcake teams to start the season with.
Yeah.
It had happened to luck out that when they did go into Dallas, Dallas was shorthanded, whatever. But they've actually performed really well, aside from tonight, where I haven't seen the score lately, but it does look like they're going down to New Orleans. But So that was the most surprising team to me. If honestly, Denver, I think, is the team that to some degree looks the sexiest in terms of, I wouldn't say necessarily maybe remaining undefeated. I don't think anybody's going to go undefeated this year, but the knock against Denver the past couple years has been whether or not the defense can hold up enough for the offense to take over.
Yeah.
The defense has played lights out. Like, I mean, literally lights out with in every single game they've played so far. And yeah, it's been a struggle, but it's not because of the defense this year. And I think with the offense, the history they've had, and with Peyton Manning, regardless of whether or not his arm is shot, like Ramona said, I think the encyclopedia of Peyton Manning, I think he's just having to rely on certain parts of the book that he just hasn't had to pull out yet.
Yeah.
But I think he knows all of it. Yeah. Like, that's the thing, is once he recognizes that if he is limited because of his arm strength now he's just going to find other ways to get the ball to the receiver. Like, that's just the kind of player that he is.
Yeah.
So I can only see that the offense continues to improve, while the defense, short having any major, major injuries. Actually, DeMarcus Ware, I think, is going to be out a couple weeks. But, yeah. But even so, I mean, that defense right now is looking like they're looking about as dominant as a defense has looked, short of maybe Seattle over the course of the past few years.
Yeah, I think my surprise as far as undefeated is probably Carolina, because we always talk about, Cam seemed like he regressed last year, and we didn't really know what kind of Cam we were going to get this year. Kelvin Benjamin goes down in the preseason, and so he's got almost no weapons left. But yeah, they're still managing to get it done. Luke Kuechly with a concussion, out for the first few games too. So I'm surprised that they're, especially, Atlanta's out of that division, and Carolina, and I'm sure nobody thought the Saints were going to be as bad as they are. And so that's a tough division.
It's actually strange that division has become a tough division, even though it doesn't seem like it's still not a tough division. Yeah. Like, it doesn't seem like it's a tough division, but it's not. But it's probably now, I guess, one of the most competitive ones. Like, yeah. With Carolina, Atlanta, and New Orleans, I could see any three of those teams beating the shit out of each other on any given week for some reason. Without also not really winning that many games outside of the division.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still not really sold on either of those three.
But which I think also, like, to go along with that, like, Carolina to me is very surprising as being undefeated. But also Cincinnati, 5-0. That's kind of nuts to me. Granted, I think it's probably one of the weaker divisions in the NFL.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. What makes the Cincinnati start surprising is beating Seattle at home after being down 24-7.
Yeah.
That is a genuine surprise. 4-1, we all, I think, I picked Seattle to win. 4-1 makes sense for that team and that talent, because we expect them to be loaded and talented, but we don't know if they're a big enough team to kind of, like, win some of these games. But, hey, that is a shock. All right. Do we have any other questions?
Who do we think will be the next to fall? I think it'll be Carolina this week to Seattle. Seattle, after the loss last week, their backs are up against the wall. Like, their playoff chances have already been slashed dramatically because of being 2-3 at this point in the season. So they've got to get their shit together quick. And so, yeah, I think they bring it against Carolina.
I'll have to say Atlanta at New Orleans. I just don't think it's a good. I think the Falcons are going to lose that
game. Oh, you're right. They just lost.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. We got another question.
Well, the Packers, Patriots, or do we?
The oh first yeah. We talked about. So.
Wait, what was the question?
If we think it can be a battle of two undefeated teams in the Super Bowl.
No.
Yeah.
I think it's so hard to go undefeated in the NFL, and to have two of them is unheard of.
Yeah, the way he asked it is if it's possible, it's definitely possible, but is it probable? No.
I mean, like, yeah, the NFL has been around for the years, and it's happened twice.
Good number.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Like, a team has gone undefeated in the regular season twice.
Yeah.
And they both made it to the Super Bowl, only one loss, but
And the other question, is Green Bay, New England, the presumed Super Bowl matchup? I think right now it has to be the favorite. But also, I do think that the Green Bay has some legitimate problems. It, the defense isn't as complete as you'd like to see. You've seen the offense and the offensive line specifically be vulnerable, and they've seen them struggle to run the ball against the Rams, against the 49ers in back-to-back weeks. So the Packers are very clearly, I think, the best team in the NFC. But even them, I think they have, there's a couple of components that make you comfortable betting against them should the right ingredient arise.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just want to be very clear about this. The most talented team in the NFC is the Dallas Cowboys. And if Romo and Dez and Sean Lee and Randy Gregory and Greg Hardy and all of these fuckers that are on their team, if all of these players are on the field at the same time, now that's the thing. You know, these are injury-prone guys coming off of suspension, whatever. But if you know, Dallas is 2-3, if Dallas can get to a point where you have four critical games, we have this stretch of five games, you know, Seattle, New York, Philadelphia, Tampa Bay, Miami. And if you can win,
I think Green Bay's in there somewhere.
You can win, those next five games, you know, if you can really kind of eat into that. If Matt Castle can play better, give you a little bit more dynamic presence, a little bit more of a stretching the field situation, because Brandon Whedon just was not working out. Then tread water and get Romo back, make a playoff push. You know, you saw Tony Romo tell Tom Brady last weekend after the game, "I'll see you in February." If Dallas can hang around, I absolutely like Dallas to make a run once they're healthy. But who the hell knows if they're going to get that far? You have to survive October, November 1st.
I agree.
And, all right.
I was going to say, I mean, defensively, they looked really good against New England this past week. They just couldn't. I mean, you can't have six straight three and outs against New England and expect to win the game.
No, you absolutely can't. And you know what? The Cowboys sacked Tom Brady 5.5 times.
Yeah.
Held them to like 80 yards of offense. I mean, it was there on a silver platter. The offense just couldn't do a damn thing, and you can't keep Brady down like that for very long. And when Randy Gregory comes back, boy howdy, I tell you what, with Sean Lee, with Lee McClain, Gregory, and Hardy all on the field at the same time, the way Byron Jones is coming on, covering the shit out of Gronkowski.
Like, yeah, props to them. Like, he had him locked down for a good half.
Yeah, yeah. I think.
And actually, that one catch that he did make to kind of break out of the slump, he was actually still covered. He just Byron just kind of overplayed it.
And the NFL, those pick plays are so difficult to guard against, and that's kind of what the Pats do. All right, to the lines, because what are we at? We're at an hour. We've been at this an hour, Logan.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my god.
Hour and 3 minutes.
My God. Well, thank you for still riding with us. Let's do these picks. All right. Denver at Cleveland. Denver is a 3.5-point favorite. Do we all like the Broncos?
3.5 points, that's it?
Yeah.
I definitely like Denver for that.
Yeah, I don't see how you can reasonably pick Cleveland in those circumstances. So.
Yeah, I mean, you give me the Broncos, you know, 21-13.
Yeah, I'm also a Cleveland fan, but I would not pick that.
I think this is the week, you know, people that want to get cute and start people like Gary Barnage, Duke Johnson, Josh McCown in deep leagues.
I started Gary Barnage last week.
Yeah, and it was a great call.
Yeah.
This week against the Denver Broncos and that defense?
Yeah, I would not start any Cleveland player whatsoever.
No Cleveland players against the Broncos if you can avoid it. Miami at Tennessee. Tennessee, 2.5-point favorite at home. Tennessee should probably be a little bit better than their record shows, but they have a legitimate franchise quarterback. They have a few weapons that are kind of emerging. Security blankets, Doyle Green Beckham, Delanie Walker. Still no real semblance of a running game. The Miami Dolphins, as I've been saying since July, actually are terrible.
Yeah.
They're going into this game with Dan Campbell, former Dallas Cowboys tight end, as your interim head coach. And Ryan Tannehill is probably the worst quarterback in the league. And as I've been perpetually telling people, a converted wide receiver who has no pocket presence, who can't throw a deep ball, who is not NFL accurate, what has he got? Well, he's got a hot wife, and he's got some good measurables, right? Height, arm strength.
All I'm saying is that your ignorance is showing. Number one, because he is not a converted wide receiver. He was a quarterback that was converted to wide receiver because he was too good of a player to not be on the field.
He was eight, so he's a converted wide receiver.
Wouldn't that mean he was a bad enough quarterback to be converted to wide receiver and then...
No, he was just a young quarterback.
He's a converted wide receiver.
And then he wasn't a good enough receiver, so like, all right, go back to quarterback.
He's like that Matt Jones dude from Arkansas who's just like 6'3" and like is a good frame, but at the end of the day, you're like, oh, this dude...
Anyways, fuck all y'all.
I want to be very clear.
I would take
Ryan picking Miami if it's not clear.
Dolphins are not good.
I would take Tannehill over Brennan Whedon any fucking day.
So are we all Titans in?
I'm Miami.
He's Miami. Miami. Yeah, I like the Titans to win that game. Are you kidding me? Come on. Washington at the Jets.
Are we still doing spreads? We're doing spreads.
Yeah, we're doing spreads. I would take Tennessee.
But yeah, that's 2.5.
So yeah. Tennessee 2.5. And Tennessee, yeah, Tennessee. I mean, you know, you can maybe Miami can get it together and organize and assemble and rally around
Dave
Campbell.
They're going to give it to Lamar Miller more.
Well, they damn well should. You know, anyone that owns Lamar Miller in fantasy and you see those 9 carries for 54 yards, you're like, fuck, just double that. Just double that. Just give him 18 carries. You'll have 100 yards. What's the problem?
I tried to trade him away from Brian Salisbury, and he won't give him to me.
Brian Salisbury, if you're listening, I love you, man. I like seeing your team overachieve in fantasy. Washington at the Jets. Can you guess the line here, JC?
The number I have from CBS Sports is crazy, and it's 6 for the Jets.
I have 5.5, but yeah.
Okay.
That's
way too many points for the Jets.
Big home favorite for a team that is not very good.
But it's also against Washington. So
Washington has won games.
Yeah, you know,
Washington is a very sturdy 2-3.
The Jets have won games. Jets have one of the best defenses in the league right now.
Yeah, but they're not
6.5. Against...
I'll take the Jets at home, but man, I'll take them 21-17. I'm not giving them that cushion. Give me Washington to eat into that spread and make it hurt.
Yeah, I'll take the Redskins in that spread.
Anyone else?
I'll take the Jets.
I'm gonna go Jets too. We're gonna be split here. So.
Yeah.
Elliot did give me his pick, so they're already locked in.
All right.
Oh, fantastic. Elliot's...
he's the tiebreaker.
Elliot's crap-tacular shit picks of the week by Elliot Fontenay. Oh, by the way, sorry, we didn't mention this. Elliot is not with us tonight. He is on loan at Everton.
Lubbock was one lure short, apparently. So he's in Lubbock.
Lubbock, Texas.
He just had to make it out to the Texas Tech game. So.
Your Kansas City Chiefs. Going to the Metrodome, or whatever it's called these days. It's a new stadium that is not even a dome anymore, which is idiotic. Kansas City at Minnesota. Minnesota 4.5-point favorite at home.
That's crazy to me.
That's another odd one.
Boy, howdy. I know that Jamal Charles is gone, but are you kidding me that Jerkandrick, what's the kid's name, West?
Jerkandrick West. Dude, everybody, like all the fantasy experts love that kid.
Yeah.
See, I'm kind of zigging and zagging. I'm kind of like picking up Nile Davis on the low. Because I think Nile Davis, while he's not good, is kind of okay and has shown something. He's had like a 3-touchdown game. That Jerkandrick West kid, it's a sink or swim situation. Plus, Andy Reid has been adamant that it is a true backfield situation. I think Nile Davis, little buy low action, definitely feeling it. All right. Hold up. So, you Cincinnati, Minnesota 4.5-point favorite, you guys are going Kansas City.
I'm going Kansas City.
Yep,
I'd say Kansas City.
Yeah, you know, Kansas City's starting to self-destruct a little bit. I thought they were a borderline elite team going into the season. Just kind of, you want to see a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, they started out strong. They did start out strong. They had that unfortunate, mishap against Denver early on in the season. I think that kind of swings things a little bit.
Yeah.
And now Jamal Charles is out for the rest of probably his life.
Oh, he'll be back next year. But yeah, you're right. I'm done for the season. I like the Vikings in a stinker.
Which, you know what? Hold on. By the way, you know what's crazy? I didn't even realize this until, for some reason, I decided to look at it. Jamal Charles has no idea what it's like to not run for 5 yards a carry in a season.
Oh, are you serious?
He has no idea what that's like.
I know like, that he has, like, a really...
Well, he has the highest per carry average in NFL history right now.
Yeah.
Like, he's carrying that right now. But he also doesn't carry the ball a lot, either.
Mm-hmm.
But... Like, there's a difference between, like, guys like Jim Brown, he has a 5 yards per carry average for his career, but there's been seasons where he's not averaged 5 yards a carry.
Yeah.
They just kind of average out. Jamal Charles has never not averaged 5 yards a carry in his life.
That's unbelievable.
I feel less like a man.
Yeah, Jamal Charles is a legitimately great player. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, Cincinnati at Buffalo. I had an acting class with Jamal Charles when I was at Texas. He was a freshman. I was a senior. Very, very sweet kid.
He's a terrible actor.
You know, here's my Jamal Charles story. He is not a homophobic person, but like a lot of people that say that come up, they come up with slang would say like that's gay or he's a faggot or something like that. And our theater teacher, who was brilliant, beautiful, progressive, awesome, was constantly being like, Jamal, please, you cannot say stop. Please stop saying these gay slurs in my class. and Jamal Charles wasn't a hateful person, but he kept doing it. And I remember we had this drill. This is like there was like a little stage, and we had to act out something with our hands, right? So like you would go up there, you'd pantomime a scene with your hands, and you'd have to guess it. So one frat dude thought it would be funny to go up there and do this, like fold your hand over like a gross stereotype of a gay man.
The limp wrist.
The limp wrist thing. Yeah. He thought it would be funny to do that, and he did it. The class was, you know, smart enough to just be like, oh, God, what the hell is this? Like, not really react to it. And then Jamal goes, oh, he's a faggot. And I'm not kidding, I swear to God. It's been for the most awkward, like, moment. And our teacher perpetually, like, just, Jamal Charles, please stop saying
slurs. Holy shit. So what you're saying is this podcast is going to show up on ESPN SportsCenter's.
Oh, this story is 100% true, my man. And also, I'm not saying that Jamal Charles is homophobic. Far from it. He was a freshman, and like many people, myself included, when I was 17, 18, I had this bad habit of saying that's gay, and luckily we had this great teacher that was really trying to drill it out of us, but it made for a couple of awkward situations. All right.
I had class with Dat Nguyen when I was in A&M, and he did not give racial slurs or homophobic slurs. So.
Cincinnati at Buffalo. This one's basically a pick'em. Cincinnati's a 1-point favorite on the road. Who you guys like in this game?
Mm.
No Tyrod Taylor.
Oh, well, yeah. Bengals.
Air Dalton, baby. I'm riding that thing into the sunset.
I gotta say, actually,
is EJ Manuel playing?
It's
EJ. Then Manuel. Absolutely Cincinnati.
Yeah, I have to go Cincy.
If you got the Cincy defense,
actually, is LeSean McCoy or Sammy Watkins playing this game?
It almost doesn't matter because they can't get him the ball and Shady can't get through the line.
That's true. Okay. Well, good point.
Yeah, I like Cincy big.
Actually, I did see that. I don't know if you saw this video or not. Did you see that? Have you seen that video of Sammy Watkins trying the over the it's basically it's an over the shoulder catching drill where you sit down on your ass and you're looking straight ahead and the ball's coming from behind you and the point is for you to try to just guess when the ball gets there.
Yeah. I feel like at this point receivers are trying to different things to do in the preseason to like try to show up Odell Beckham.
Odell's
going to win every time.
Yeah. Well, this was especially hilarious because he's very bad at it. Like,
yeah.
Like they're just he's trying to guess when the ball's gonna land. It's not even close.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of like that game in Ghostbusters where it's like guess the pattern on the card. It's like
you're
so close. He gets electrocuted.
It is a star.
Yeah. Now Odell Beckham is becoming one of those like must see things in the NFL. It's like go watch him warm up before games because he's like there's a vine of him jumping in slow motion just like snatching a ball one hand out of midair and it's how does he do that?
It's so crazy.
He's 5'11", that shouldn't be possible.
Did you guys see this? This is my favorite video of the week. It's look at this. It's the mayor of London playing rugby in the streets.
I heard about this.
What's his name? It's Boris Johnson. Yeah, Boris Johnson. That dude is badass.
Boris Johnson, the mayor of London, and right now just playing with the kiddos, getting really excited. Oh, he gets the ball going down the flank. Oh, and he knocked over a kid.
it's like that funny Peyton Manning SNL sketch where he's like throwing the ball at kids.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, so
and the kid got him though.
The kid got him. You know, it's funny.
It was a tackle short of the goal.
They always do this shit like on morning radios when it's like, hey, did you see this video? Did you see this farting cat video? Look at this. And then they show the video and they're like, oh, that's delightful. And it's like no one else can see it. I hate it when that shit happens, but they but we just did that shit.
We did.
All right, Chicago and Detroit. Detroit is a
Detroit. Adorable farting cat mysteries.
Chicago is a 2.5 point. No, Detroit. What? Detroit is 0-5, and Detroit's favorite.
Against who?
Against Chicago.
The Bears.
I tell you what, this is the Ramona Mears lock of the week.
Nah, I don't take that.
Give me the Bears 27, the Lions 19.
Man, I'm amazed that I picked the Bears right last week, because Jay Cutler is my gambling kryptonite. I never picked the Bears right, and I managed to last week. I think the Lions got to get a win at some point, and they're probably going to do it this week. And yeah, Cutler's been playing pretty good the last couple of weeks, and so I think this is the one where it's like, oh yeah, he sucks at quarterback.
He's still Jay Cutler. No, he doesn't suck. He's an awesome quarterback.
Well, yeah,
he's just not
Ryan Tannehill.
He's like in this. He's better than this.
Damn straight.
But he can. God, he can move the ball. He can throw the ball. He can make. He can put it into windows, and he can stretch the field. In ways that, you know, the Ryan Tannehill faction cannot.
Yeah, he's got the golden arm. He's just not very smart.
Yeah, he makes careless decisions. He's the Maverick of...
So who do you like, the Lions?
I like the Bears big.
Oh, okay.
Bears are going to go in there and make it clap. Well, all right.
You're probably going to be right, because I'm going Lions. So, yeah.
I'm going to Chicago to go in there and just say give them the clap.
I said make it clap, which okay. is like a stripper reference.
But I think I picked Detroit on the ESPN pick'em, but I feel like now Chicago is going to take it. So.
Damn, me and Elliot picked the Lions. It's probably good for you guys.
Yeah, yeah. When Elliot makes a pick, you're just like, oh, Elliot.
That's we love you, Elliot.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Elliot. Houston at Jacksonville. This is a pick'em. This is a you call it. Nobody
it's
wants
to. It's a pick'em now. The line moved a lot because when the line first opened, Houston was favored, and I was like, "What are you doing, Vegas?" Like, yeah. But now it's a pick'em.
Okay. It's really going to be who's going to lose less in this game.
I like the Texans because I think Brian Hoyer is not terrible, and I think the problem with Brian Hoyer is, you know, again, he's a backup quarterback. Brandon Whedon is a backup quarterback. Like, you have. Brian Hoyer is good when he has to start one or two games. The league doesn't figure him out. He comes in fresh off the bench. He's a change of pace guy. But he has such a defined ceiling. Doesn't have a big arm. Can't make all the throws. The defense kind of knows what tendencies he likes.
DeAndre Hopkins.
But when you got D. Hopkins, when you have when you're not terrible, you can beat the Jaguars. Give me the Texans, 17-13.
This game's going to be about special teams. And you know what? Houston has the advantage in the punter. Shane Leckler.
When you got Shane
make the
Leckler.
The difference in the entire game, it's going to win it.
Shane Leckler, fantasy MVP.
I'm going to say...
39 years old from East Bernard, Texas. I didn't realize he's already 39. Wow. I'm gonna look at...
I feel like he's been 39 for like the least...
He's been there for a while. I only own one NFL jersey, and it's a Houston Texans Shane Leckler jersey. So,
oh, yeah.
He's going to be the difference maker there.
You know what? I own three jerseys, and one of them is Dat Win.
Oh, man.
I own like several. I have like a Jerome Bettis Rams jersey. I have like a Tishmenga Biakabatuka jersey from the Panthers.
I used to have a Marshall Faulk Colts jersey.
Oh, those are sick. I had a Brett Favre Packers jersey. Had a Troy Aikman Cowboys, an Emmitt Smith Cowboys, a Deion Sanders Cowboys, a Michael Irvin Cowboys.
I got a Dat Win Cowboys, Jason Witten Cowboys, and I've got a Mike Allstott Tampa Bay.
Mike Allstott. Oh, love Mike Allstott.
Yeah. I'm going Jacksonville. Moving on.
I also got a Tony Romo.
My argument is dismissed.
Arizona at Pittsburgh. Arizona 3.5 point favorite. Pittsburgh coming off of a big Monday night win. Despite the truly irresponsible call to let Le'Veon Bell dance all the way to the end zone with 5 seconds on the clock and one timeout, and you would have completely blown it and lost the game. All of a sudden, Pittsburgh, a lot of confidence, a lot of swagger. I tell you what, if Big Ben was playing, I'd feel kind of good about this being an even game. But with that Arizona unit, that offensive line, that three-headed running game, that opportunistic defense, giving the Cardinals big, Arizona by a touchdown.
Actually, what's the line right now?
3.5.
I'll take Arizona.
Yeah, three.
I'll
and
take
half,
Arizona for sure.
3.5 for the Cardinals.
Yeah, I think Arizona is the easy pick there.
All right, this is desperation time for the Seahawks. Now, again, Carolina is a 4-0 team traveling to Seattle and is a 5.5-point dog on the road. You know, the thing about the Hawks is that their offense doesn't really move the ball. They don't have dynamic receivers. Mm-hmm. They don't have a quarterback that is consistently putting up numbers, and he is a, you know, move the chains quarterback, make big plays quarterback, but he's not an every down, you know, you have to account for this guy or this throw. This game could really go either way. I sincerely believe that just about anything that can happen in this game, but I'm going to take the Seahawks because I just can't see them losing.
I like the Panthers at -7, which is what I originally saw the number at, but at 5.5, yeah, I'll go Seahawks.
I'm definitely going Seahawks. I think that home field advantage really goes a long way. The Seattle fans are amazing, so it's going to make a big difference.
I do see Seattle winning, but if it's, you know what, if it's 5.5, no, I think Carolina closes that. I think it's 17-13 Seattle, so I'm going to take Carolina to cover the spread.
I love it.
To win or to cover the spread?
Just cover the spread. I don't think they're going to win. Okay. But I do think it's going to be a little bit closer, pretty much for the same reasons that Ramon said. Like, Seattle's offense does not look very good.
Yeah, I'm actually with you. I like Seattle to win, but not by more than a touchdown.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, this is another one that makes me uncomfortable. Yes, the Packers are at home. Yes, they are favorites. Phillip Rivers, San Diego Chargers coming into town. Mm. That line, I would feel antsy at 5.5. That is a 9.5-point home favorite for the Packers.
Yeesh.
That's way too many points. I'd say give it Chargers. I'm not even thinking twice about that. That makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I agree. I'd say 27-21. Green Bay wins for sure, but I don't think they it's 10 points by any stretch.
Oh, I completely agree. All right, here's another one.
No, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Green Bay is going to win, but not the cover. So, all
right. So, this was the Super Bowl a couple years ago. The 2012-2013 season culminated with a Baltimore over San Francisco Super Bowl. I was actually in Baltimore for that one, believe it or not. I drove from DC to Baltimore. It was about a 50-minute drive. I just wanted to see it. Showed up. Spent like an hour and a half hanging out at my cousin's house, who lived in downtown Baltimore. But then when it was game time, every single bar downtown was one in, one out. And it was almost like South By. Like, you just couldn't go in any bar. Every single bar downtown had a line. So we went into a place called, I believe it was called Hogan's Alley. So I'm by this old-ass dude. And it was like me and my friends and this like 50-year-old guy and this like totally run-down bar. And it was like a potluck, so everybody brought like, you know, fucking shit and a fucking the fucking shit that you heat up, the fucking, you know what I'm talking about?
Crock pot.
You know what I mean? Everybody bought, yeah. It was like crock pots and like a salad. Hogan's Alley in Baltimore, and it was the best Super Bowl I've ever watched.
Next
time I go to HEB and I go down the
Hogan's Alley section,
that's totally what I'm looking for. So I'm, the fucking shit with the shit that heats the fucking, you know, bright what?
Hogan's Alley in Baltimore. Actually, it looks kind of nice here. This isn't it. It doesn't matter. The point is,
it looks much nicer in the photos than it does from your memory.
Down in Federal Hill. Yeah, this was it. This is where I went. Holy shit. I just got this rush of nostalgia. Hogan's Alley. Shout out to Hogan's Alley in Baltimore. You got to go. If you guys are ever in Baltimore, this place is a just legitimately, like, you know, like legit as fuck place in the fucking place. This place is the best fucking place I've ever been to.
If you're there, tweet us at ITLcast photos of you at Hogan's Alley.
Look at this. Check out this review. Avoid this place. It's dark and ugly. The people there are not friendly. So much cursing and offensive language. This place rules. You guys got to go to
Hogan's. It sounds like my kind of place.
Yeah. If you're ever in Baltimore, go to Hogan's Alley. That's all I can tell you. He made the guy that ran the bar back, he like had like his dirty ass bar, and he's also like, hey, I got a soup going. You guys want some of the soup? And we were like, yeah, fuck yeah. All right, so good times.
So what's your pick?
Baltimore's. I gotta go. You know, after I do have an affection for the Ravens because of that. But cross country trip, San Francisco, Give me the 49ers. No, fuck the 49ers and fuck Santa Clara and you know fuck that whole like you know we're gonna take the 49ers and put them in the techie valley. Fuck that shit. Fuck those people. Baltimore.
What's
from Hogan's Alley? From Hogan's Alley with love.
What's the line?
It's 1 point.
Oh, yeah. It's to pick them. Okay. It's in Baltimore.
It's Santa Clara.
Yeah, I was going to say
it's not in San Francisco. Yeah, it's in Santa Clara, California.
It's in the South Bay.
You know what? I'll still take Baltimore. San Francisco does not look good at all.
Yeah. Only thing that kind of worries me about Ravens' pass rush isn't that good, and Cap actually had a decent game last week. But yeah, I think the Ravens.
No, I'm totally with you. I mean, I think if I was picking this game without my stupid bias, it's a good week to talk yourself into the 49ers.
But you know what? I'm going to pick because of my stupid bias. I used to live in the Bay Area. I'm going to pick the 49ers.
Love the Bay Area, by the way. But I don't like the Niners in Santa Clara, and I don't like that new stadium, Levi's Stadium. Look at the Fader Fort. I hate that place. All right, New England at Indianapolis. The Patriots are a 7-point road favorite, playing against a depleted Colts team that is not impressed yet. And, by the way, the Patriots hate everybody, and they're going to try and score every time they touch the ball. You know they're going to try and make it 55-0. I'm going to ride that train. I like the Patriots in this one. Does anybody like the Colts?
If you pick the Colts in this game, you are an idiot.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And then Elliot's like, I like the Colts, guys.
Well, he likes the Patriots.
Okay.
But the Patriots are out for blood this week, specifically against the Colts.
And since Elliot's not here, this is the part where I'm going to play Elliot, and Elliot, we'll go ahead and... This is the part where Elliot complains about the Patriots being cheaters. And you know Tom Brady? And he's a cheater.
Belichick,
he's a cheater. I don't have my Elliot on right now.
I like your Elliot impression. It's good. Yeah.
He's a fucking cheater.
Out of love.
And he's a fucking cheater.
You know what? Actually, here's a better game.
And Tom Brady deflate.
What's going to go? Yeah. What exactly is New England going to get accused of this week?
But can I say something? I'm a lawyer. It works in a nonprofit. All right. So we like the Pats in that one. All right. Monday Night Football. New York Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles. This is a hot one. Loser drops to 2-4. The winner goes to 3-3. Has Philly turned it around? Are the Giants turning the corner as the best team in the NFC East? Only one of these teams has a franchise quarterback, and that's why I'm picking the Giants.
What number do you have for that?
I have Philly by 3.5.
Okay. I'm really Philly by 3.5.
Yeah.
I'm taking New York. I think New York wins the game. So.
Yeah, I like the Giants. Give me the Giants.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Giants are rolling right now. They're doing pretty well. I'm not a fan of the Giants, but I think that they have their shit together, for lack of better terms.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. All right, everybody. Well, that concludes. I don't know, man. It's been a really, really good episode, good week. Shout out to Elliot. Shout out to everybody that couldn't be here. Shout out to our buddy, shout out to him, and we will see you on the flip side.
And the fucking shit of the fucking heating and the crock pots.
I feel like we're suddenly in like a morning radio show, morning drive time radio show.
I know, where it's like, you know, like, let me pull up some sound effects. So, alright, so, I guess, last, hold on, I want my sound effect.
Are you trying to YouTube dildo McButt?
Here we go.
Okay.
All right.
Fair enough.
And you got your inside the locker. There you go. All right.
Go Cubs.
Cubbies go. All
right, you got one, Adam. Who you got?
What?
All right, that was...
Like, Dallas has a bye this week. I don't have anything to root for this week.
And Giga Maggies. Oh, I didn't go. Ah, son of a bitch.
Giga Maggies.
There we go. All right. Thank you.
All right.